Welcome to Holden Village. Today, in the incredible Creekside Room, today's speaker is Jan Kirk. And she will be speaking on Cherish the Earth, especially for women. So let's listen in on Jan Kirk.
I should say who I am and what I do. We're from Redding, California, which is Northern California. It's about 3 hours north of Sacramento. A very hot spot. It's nice to be out of there. See, I got out of there. Back into a hot spot. Right. And I teach voice, actually, at Simpson College there in Reading. I'm adjunct faculty. It's part-time. But it's about half-time. My voice studio teaching is about half-time, and it leaves me mornings. I try to leave mornings for writing, and I do some illustrating. I'm really starting to get into that now that my nest is empty and I have a little more time to concentrate on such things. So I want you to know there is life after kids. And in fact, it looks like quite a bit, you know, quite a bit and quite a lot to do. My intention today is very simple. You've all heard lots of things about taking care of the earth and recycling and all these things that we're into, and I have an idea that if the Christian women of the world decided to clean up the earth, that it would happen. And so that's my challenge to you today. And there's some reasons for that. First of all, the feminine skills of nourishing and management and organization. I heard some gentlemen say, who was in business, they run studies, and they said anybody who can run a family could run General Motors Corporation too, if you just transfer those gifts. There's another major reason, however, and that is that, do you belong to your women's organization at your church?
I'm kind of on the edge, but I do.
Well, I am too. I'm on the edge too, because I'm busy. You know, I think it's so much, it's not for working women. So I do a few things, but I'm not super involved. How about you?
Probably doesn't have an organization.
Really?
And if it did, I work, so I'm involved.
Yeah, it's a different problem.
And I belong to the altar guild, you know, and occasionally when the weeds grow, it's in the evening, and I can go after
my support. Uh-huh. So we're all in the same boat, really. I'd like to ask if you're Lutheran. I'm Presbyterian, actually.
I'm Lutheran.
Lutheran?
Catholic.
Catholic?
Lutheran.
Lutheran. Okay, my little mix here, which is kind of neat. But there are many women's organizations still functioning, and they function very well. They're some of the most stable organizations in a church, because they seem to just do their thing, no matter what the political or theological storms are. The ladies just hang in there, and they keep meeting and keep doing their programs. And it's a very important network that's there. They usually have a prayer life going, so they have that at the center of what they do. And women also influence, whether they're in the women's group or not, they influence every aspect of church work. Hi, come in, join us. That's all right, we found a fairly cool room early. I'm pleased. We were noting too that it's 96 across the street, but it's only 90 here, see, so we're better off. Women influence every aspect of the church. They're on the deacons, they're on the board of education, they're on the outreach, they're on the fellowship. We have our fingers in every pie, and I know the feminists are bugging us to, you know, for equal. I'm all for equal opportunity and equal pay, that's for sure, and we're all equal before the Lord. And now that part of it's opening up to us too. We're getting more into the power committees and, you know, can have a major say and a more open say perhaps, and for some of us, than we've had before. So I just see us as in a unique position to do something. So that's my challenge today. Now, my perspective is, I did not want to get involved in this. Okay. Yeah, that's our book if you want to take a peek at it. I did not want to get involved in this. I'm not a science person. I'm not a naturalist. I'm not a city manager. I don't do garbage. I'm a singer and I'm an artist, and now I'm a writer. And think I'm too old for this and I'm too busy. Forget it. But the trouble is, the world that I sing about is getting to be a terrible mess, and the nature landscapes that I like to paint are getting worn down or disappearing entirely. There's so much encroachment with development in our area, and it's tough. And when I finally got concerned enough about it, I wrote it. So I basically wrote that book with Don's input. He's been my tour leader and guide all over the American West for 38 years. We've had a ball camping everywhere, but we have our favorite places, mostly national park areas that we especially love.
And
No, we're not. We're lay people. I've introduced myself. I teach voice, actually, at Simpson College in Redding, California. And Don teaches at the community college there. He's a biologist. And he's my house theologian, too. He has quite a theological library and has really been into the Bible study and loves that part of it, too. With Patty Mueller. She's been doing the long hikes, and he's doing the short ones. Okay, well, we have to do something, that's all. We just simply have to do something. My viewpoint is a sandbox viewpoint. I'm a hands-on person, and I want to know what we're talking about and define the terms. And so the first thing I wanted to know was, well, two things actually. What does the Bible say about this? And the second thing is, why aren't we hearing more about it in churches? Because in our area, we are not. Now, is that true of you guys too?
Well, it's not the most pressing concern in our area. So,
I think we live in redneck country, and we're a little far away from the city, a couple hundred miles. And we come up to Holden and find out what the Presbyterians are doing nationally. I mean, they had a book out, I didn't even know it, 2 years ago, about it up here, you know?
And I think you're there.
No, it's at the head of the Sacramento Valley, and it's really past the farming country. We're right next to the foothills. In fact, there's a few foothills south of us. But we're kind of in this basin, and it can get very hot there in the summertime. Yep. Yeah, we have mountains on three sides, and we live on the east side of the valley, and we can have a view of Mount Lassen, which is really nice. We can see 60 miles that way, and then Shasta is directly north, and if we go due west 4-hour drive, we're in the ocean. So it's nice. Yes, we're in redneck country. Yeah. Yeah, loggers. Four-wheel drive.
Because I come from a farm, we farmers, would you give me your definition of a redneck?
Oh!
The
rednecks I'm talking about. Okay, rednecks in our end of the woods are, this is kind of beside the point. Has nothing to do with farmers, that's for sure.
But
they run around in their four-wheel drive pickups and, you know, throw their beer bottles out the window. And they simply aren't into this kind of thing. They simply are not into this kind of topic. In fact, they're losing their jobs, you know, and that's a serious concern.
I just wonder what your definition is, because I thought my name was more, I guess I thought of red that used to be more USA and white supremacy.
In my neck of the woods, they're fairly uneducated, and they're just out for a good time. And oh, okay.
We're not that far from that.
Where are you from?
The Aryan Nation. I'm from Odessa, Washington, which is 80 miles south of Fort Lane. It's just another little town. And then Aryan is the Aryan Nation.
Are you Lutheran too?
Yes.
We have kind of a mix here. So. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to have a lot of things I want to cover, and then I'm hoping to have some discussion towards the last part of this, so we'll start storing up your ideas. And okay, so my major questions were to find out what the Bible says, and then to find out why it's not in the churches, and then why we haven't adopted this as our as a gospel lifestyle thing to incorporate it into our lives. The theologians are busy building a case for this, but it's all pretty lofty. I don't know if you've read any of those books, but they kind of go over your head, you know, unless you're a theologian. And we don't really have time to wait for them to get it all together. We need to get with it right now, as you know, in your own area. And I feel like Christians have something especially unique to offer. We're the ones who have faith, we're the ones who have hope, and we're the ones who have love, and that's pretty special. Now, if you're looking at me like I'm a saint, I'm not. I'm a sinner. I'm still trying to learn to recycle. We have a new redwood deck. It's not that new, but, you know, why didn't we plan something else? I don't know. When we went to do that, we just weren't into this yet. I have to say it's old growth redwood. I mean, it's not old growth. It's second growth redwood. Sorry, I said that backwards. There is no old growth redwood left, not in lumber companies. But it looks like old growth because the guy who did our deck hand-picked every board, you know, which took forever. But anyway, so I'm feeling guilty about some things.
You know, you look back on certain things and you go and see it after the fact a lot of times.
You think, oh no, why didn't I think of that? You know, so we're all learning. We're in a real change, and it's affecting everybody, and it's giving everybody guilt trips. And so we just have to remember that it's okay to go through some failure times, and we'll have our successes as we go. I want to just quickly run through a little bit of basic Christianity, which might give you a little bit of confidence about your approach to earth keeping. And we went into this in a greater depth on Tuesday when we actually did a scripture search and looked some of these things up. And actually our book is The Scripture and the Environment is the second title of it. And it's just tons and tons of verses that we looked up and related to this topic. So it makes a really good resource for anybody you know who might need it. It also makes a good Bible study. And I love to sell books, but I think the message of that book is so important that I'm just hoping it'll go everywhere. So even if this just triggers your own thinking to go search out your own scriptures, I mean, go for it, because this is so terribly important. But this is really basic Christianity. This is one of the first things you learn in a Bible school and in a college, and our Bible class in a college. And first of all, God was revealed to us three ways, and the first of those was as the being behind nature. He was revealed through, quote, all that has been made, and that happened long ago. This is in the Judeo-Christian, you know, historical roots. The very first name of God was El, that the Hebrews attached to this being, and that's what they were seeing it as something, a spiritual being that was separated from nature, but in fact behind nature, or was the designer, a creator God. So right there we have our connection to the natural world, and we've forgotten it. Theologians learned that so long ago, or your pastor did. He doesn't think to tell us again, right? But you know, we're looking at Native American things Eastern religions and all this because they sound like they have this mysterious connection to the earth. Well, we did too. We just don't talk about it. So there it is. Later names to describe God were Yahweh, Jehovah, and Lord of Lords, and Light Giver, and Father, and Judge, and Redeemer, and Savior, and all those other names that we see in the scriptures. But the very first one was El, and it meant that which was made through that which was made. They recognize this being. Then, the second important thing about nature and Christianity is the scriptures themselves. You know how much imagery there is from the natural world. All the Psalms, but not just the Psalms. I mean, throughout the whole Bible, they describe the Holy Spirit, for example, as a dove, or water, or wind, or, you know, you have all these manifestations. Well, I shouldn't say manifestation. We have all these metaphors for spiritual truths and understandings. And it's all based on the creation. also how important the creation is then, and how important we feel that connection and understand it and make sure that it stays there, make sure that we keep our creation. Without that natural world, I don't know how we would understand those same lessons. Totally different ball game. Then the third thing is through Jesus Christ. He was sent, God so loved the world that he sent his only son, you know, to save it, basically. And that's the old verse, but the it wasn't just the people. He was sent to save the creation, too. And we learned about that in Bible study. Did you go to Bible study this morning where she did the passage in Romans?
No, but Mike, her husband did. He said he was telling about it.
It was excellent. And she did a really wonderful word study, and you come up with the sense that we are co-laborers with God, with the creation, you know, all humans. We are co-laboring together to bring about this redemption of the earth. And that sense that we are co-laborers and God's involved in it tells us right there that it's a spiritual problem that we're dealing with. It's not just a mechanical thing that we're messing up the grounds that we use, but that there's a spiritual thing going on too, which is kind of neat. These three main things, you know, there's your basic Christianity, and if you have those three understandings, you will really feel comfortable about taking a stand, a Christian stand, for taking care of the environment. Any questions about that? Or comments?
Sometimes I get really confused about what kind of stand to take. You know, as far as political issues, you know, spotted owl.
Oh.
I know that's not the issue, but it's like, do we pay attention to all that? I mean, we have to pay attention to it, but how much do we do actively to support it?
It is something we're going to get into a whole lot later. Just off the top of my head, and you can add to this too as we get into our discussion. I really think for myself, I've had to make the decision that I have gifts in certain areas, mm-hmm. and we all have gifts in certain areas. And I think I'll be more effective if I kind of stick to that, how using my gifts and focusing on that. And so I don't necessarily get into, because lobbying and politicking isn't my thing, I don't necessarily become an activist in those kinds of battles. I'm more on the education side of it, mm-hmm. so I'm trying to put my energies into that. But some people have a great gift for the political arena, and I think we should dive in. I mean, if that's your thing. But on the other hand, and I think you'd probably agree, we need to be informed, you know, on those issues so that we can make informed choices, too. And it's really tough. It's really tough sometimes.
It's not easy. Yeah, it seems like every time the ballot comes around again, there's just so much more, you know, and it's so difficult to get information about every issue, you know, a lot of times
you get pretty sad.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. Unless you can go someplace to find that source that really gives it to you, and you don't often find it. You know, you're getting it from either this side or from this side.
And you sure can't trust the media. You know, you really have to weigh the information that comes.
And I think, for me, one of the hardest things about these issues of environment are, you know, people versus natural resources. Mm-hmm.
It's tough.
Like the lobbying industry. It's just 22.
It is.
Well, Tom, go ahead. When they had to shut down, this has nothing to do with the environment, but when they had to shut down all the big steel mills back there, I mean, because there just was no market for steel. I mean, I kind of equate it to the same thing as having to shut down the lobbying industry. What they did, and this is sort of part of the beginning of communalizing in the United States, is that the communities got together and decided what the problem was, and then they came up with solutions. You know, the people who worked in the steel industry retrained to work in other industries, and they found ways to retool factories to do other things. And I mean, for me,
the issue of people versus natural resources, a very important part of this whole thing is that they have to come up with a solution to retrain people or retool. Retool sawmills so that they can do something. I mean, they can do other things. You don't have to be logging all the time. But if people, that's their livelihood, that's what they've done all their lives, and they can't see beyond that, and it's frightening, it's really scary.
I think the education part of that is vital. You know, people are aware that they can do something else.
But that's the hard thing, is to help people understand.
But they have their abilities, and they have means of.
Well, but it does. It bears on where we're going, that's for sure.
As an educator, we're realizing that we're training children, we're teaching children, and hopefully getting them ready to be in the world is going to be, by the time they're that age, completely different than it is now, as far as technology and that kind of thing. And we're getting to a time when whatever you start out as a career, you probably aren't going to end up as a career simply because of the drastic changes in technology. It's hard to know how we're going to train children to do things we don't know how to do, to be ready to do things that we have no idea what it's going to be.
Yes, it's a really different world coming up. It really is. Well, I'm here to awaken Christians to reality. There's some Christians who don't think we have a problem, but it sounds like you're already there, so I don't have to belabor that. And I'm here to awaken Christians to responsibility, especially Christian women, because it is a Christian concern. It's a God's creation. It's not ours. He put us in charge of it. Said, take care of it. But it's really, it really belongs to God, and it's a spiritual problem. It's not just bad management. I'm especially here to awaken Christian women because you have such a unique position in a lot of areas. Just think about, I know you're all working women, but even so, who buys most of the household items in your household? And who plans the decor of your house? And who manages the Christmas and family traditions? I mean, if you've got a husband who will really jump in, you're lucky. I mean, a lot of them do, but they're not doing it a lot. I think so, and for most families anyway, I think that's still true. That may be changing. I think it is changing, but still true. Who oversees the garbage? Who oversees the garden? I mean, if you have a husband who'll take out the garbage, you're lucky. Mine does pretty well, actually. He'll take it, I'll help him get it together. He takes it down to the street. We have to kind of go on a hill, so it's kind of a job. He'll do that. And I feel really fortunate that I don't have to do that. Who buys the clothes? Who manages the household chores? Who makes sure that everything gets done? Who oversees the church kitchen? Who oversees the church office? Who oversees the children's programs? I mean, you just stop and think, there aren't too many men that have jumped into that. The celebrations at your church, who runs them? The people services, who takes charge when there's a marriage or a funeral or a disaster, something happens and they need church community help. Who takes charge? It has a lot to do with who's working the most and who's not working the most and all that. But it also has to do with our unique gifts in that area. And then, as I said, in addition, we're gaining some equal status in the church and in our vocations in our community. We can have a unique input there to wherever we happen to be operating. So you believe there's a problem? I don't have to read you scary stories. That the landfills are almost full. That their sanitary landfills are not sanitary. I mean, the rain's leaching junk into our groundwater. I mean, it is. If you get any of those books out over there, there's not as many as there used to be, but there's still quite a few. The state of the world, the ones that have, 50 things you can do to save the earth, you can make a difference was one of my favorites. I see they're out of it over here. And there's just book after book after book that tells you what the problems are and makes you really alert to, we've got to do something.
plastic's a terrible problem. I had to do garbage yesterday. It's one job I hate here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorting other people's garbage is no fun. But I tell you, you don't think about garbage the same way after you've done it once a year. I mean, you just, because we're separating, you know, the foil goes here and the plastics go here. And of course, the recyclables, we have, they can take the glass and aluminum and the cans out. And the newspaper can be recycled, and then they burn the burnable things. But they have to, you know, what do you do with batteries? What do you do with odds and ends of things? And there was so much more plastic this time, like plastic bags, and some of it's from kitchen things, because their food comes that way. You know, how do you fight that? That's tough.
That's a really good
question. That can be recycled, too.
Yeah. Well, actually, some can, but only about, well, I've got the statistic here. Yeah, all the wrapping. Only half of plastics can be recycled. And in our area, it's even less than that because they only take containers, the number one
thing. We just started a recycling center in our community.
Is this a large town?
This is a town of 11,000.
Uh-huh.
We started this center.
Great.
I mean, we've been working, wanting it for a long time, and it finally started, I guess, this summer, early summer. Probably in the spring. And they're already starting to close it because people aren't using it now.
Oh, really?
But we can take the pop cans, we can take tin cans, but we have to have taken both ends off and flattened them.
Mm-hmm.
Except if you're an elderly person who's frail, they don't trust you about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I am, but the guy told me. Plastics, if they have a number one, like the clear plastic milk bottles go in one bin, the detergent bottles go in another. They both have twos on the bottom, but they have to be sorted. Mm-hmm. And then they take plastic bags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our store takes plastic bags now. I can take my bags back. What a relief.
Yeah, Walmart takes bags back, too.
Uh-huh.
Do you have to wash out the glass jars?
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, except you have to wash them out, but you don't have to take the label off.
I find it's easier just to wash everything out because I can keep it in the kitchen and it doesn't.
You don't have to worry about it.
It smells so good, you know.
Everything must be washed. In fact, they will turn it away if they think your stuff's dirty.
Yeah. Styrofoam is a terrible problem. They think it doesn't actually decompose. Does not decompose. If they burn it, it's, then it's toxic. And you can break it up into little bitty pieces, but I mean, you know, it's not going to make soil or anything. So anyway, it's a terrible problem. At the moment, it's not recyclable. They're still working on that, I think. Water's limited supply. It's growing more polluted. The air, the smoke, the smog, the whole thing. And of course, the energy problems. You've read reams about that. You probably went through a gas shortage. You know about energy shortages. So anyway, and the problem, of course, with a lot of very well-meaning people is they don't think it's happening in their area. But I noted last summer when we were out in the summers a lot, and when we went home, it's like a 45-mile drive from the Lassen area to our home, Palo Cedro, and it's downhill all the way. We have 5,000 feet down to 200. And I'll bet, I counted five miles to the bulldozer in that 45 miles. There were so many bulldozers out on those hills, I couldn't believe it. I was the worst I'd ever seen. And they're clearing, you know, for whatever reason, mostly homes going up in that area. And it was horrible. A friend of mine said his neighbor, I live in an area where there's 1 acre parcels a lot and a few 5 acres still left. And a lot of people have animals, you know, 4-H and horses and kids all play soccer. It's a really nice place to raise a family. But he said he watches his neighbor every once in a while bury his oil from his, you know, he changes the oil in his car and he buries the oil on his property because he's always been able to do that. And he's not going to waste his time going down to the place to take it. Yeah. And you know, that leaches into wells. And who, if somebody wants to garden there later, I mean, it's happening, you know, right next door. We have muddy waters in the wintertime because we get torrential rains there sometimes in the winter. It's not like the Northwest where it's a gentle mist a lot. I mean, we don't want to rains, it pours. But now we have so much development, and they at least do have restrictions against that for developers. They're supposed to guard against, you know, erosion into streams, but it happens all the time. So then they fine them, you know, a few $100, and they just go back and do it again. Well, I mean, they can't seem to be responsible enough to prevent it in the first place. That's what really irritates me.
Leveling for housing. Is that housing necessary? Is the population?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think we're getting overbuilt. Mm-hmm.
Well, so now, you know, just thinking about, you know, everybody's right to live in a 1-acre plot and a single family home, and maybe it's better kind of for the environment for people to be living in.
To have different situations.
Yeah,
right.
There was just a survey. Did you get one of those for the Metro?
Metro.
There was a survey in the Portland area, the greater Portland area, about, I had a lot of questions about development, and one of them was, do they start restricting lot size? They were going to put it down, 200 or 300 square feet, I think, or something. You know, they wanted to make them smaller, and just different things like that, that were in the survey. What do you think about that?
And they're trying to put the plan together.
They're looking for a 10 or 15 year plan because the area is developing so much around the outskirts. It was a good survey, but it really made you stop and think about what you have, what you want, and what, you know, what is fair for everybody, and what ecologically will be the best thing for the growth, because it's going to happen no matter what. But can they take steps to make it happen better?
And Portland already has a wonderful planning with green belts and
it's got some good things going on.
And
so I mean, it's nice to see that they're looking at that, but it really makes you stop and think about you know, is it okay for everybody to have what I have, or is it am I going to start restricting?
What I often wonder about on a farm is we live southwest of Spokane, and it's just flat desert, big country, and it's it's a mile and a half to our next neighbor. So you've got hundreds of acres in between. And is someday that going to be covered with people?
In defense of our area, I have to say the land they're developing, it's good land to develop because it's not agricultural.
Oh, that's
it's all manzanita scrub, and I thought nobody'd ever live out there, you know. But,
well, that's where, so, like, where I live is I live in Gresham, which is east of Portland, and a great deal of that area was farming. It was berries and that sort of thing.
And
a lot of that is just disappearing as it spreads east. And that's really, you know, that's sad. And you just wonder how, and I think part of the plan maybe is that to see for each town, you know, Gresham's a city into itself. Gresham's pretty big as a suburb, but, you know, to develop each of the areas so that it's maybe starting to limit some of that encroachment on
the. And of course, we have the salmon problem. You do too. I mean, they had to no salmon fishing, no commercial salmon. I guess the sport fishing's kaput too this year for the first time. All up and down the coast, you know, California, Oregon, and Washington, because there's no salmon.
And it's partly because of
the dams prevent from coming up.
The dams, but habitat, it's loss of habitat.
All sorts of things.
And there's the Sacramento River goes right through our area, and that's a beautiful big river. And they have a diversion dam 30 miles south of us at Red Bluff. And they put in these special screens, you know, so the fingerlings could get through and all this. That the salmon, well, they discovered after being in there for 10 or 15 years, that was actually killing the fingerlings that went through. I mean, that was last year. I saw it in the paper. So I thought, whoa. Anyway, you know, it's here.
Poor planning.
Yeah. And they were doing their best. So anyway, I guess on the Christian concern, do you want to hear more about that? I started looking for verses. There's commands, basically the one in Genesis, where God's first words to Adam and Eve, if you want to go back that far, it says, here's the earth, folks, take care of it.
Yeah, and nothing. That one that says dominion over the animals, and that gets a little.
Well, that has been warped, twisted by people who want to make a killing off of whatever. They exploit it. I mean, it says to have dominion, and it says to let it flourish, and you know, and it doesn't say use it up. No, there's no place in there that says use it up, and you know, so That, and we Christians have been blamed for that, for the problems because of that verse, you know, which is really unfair. I'm sure we've done things we didn't mean to do, but it's not a Christian. We didn't cause it. The Industrial Revolution pretty much is the cause of it. That's what happened, and that went back in the 1800s, starting in England, and then moving into America. But every major civilization, you know, for eons back, has tended to wreck their environment. And animals do it too. That's in the book. There's stories from the naturalists in the book. You know, prairie dogs will foul their own environment after a while. And what do? They pick up and move. They go over to the next hill. Yeah, and let it go back to a meadow or a prairie or whatever it was. So, anyway, God blessed life. That's in Genesis 2. Well, God blessed life, then we're doing a godly work if we help that to happen, help it to continue. God has purposes for the earth, and they're spiritual as well as material. I mean, in the first place, he made it for us to live on, right? And so it supplies everything that we need. We're getting so far away from the farm, or so... because of our urban communities, and so many of us are living more and more in towns and cities, and we're losing a little bit of that connection, but it's there. I mean, where else would we live? Where else would 5 billion people live? You know, the earth is our home. It's sustenance for life. God's purposes, he uses it to teach, just like the spiritual understandings I was mentioning at the beginning. It's used to reveal God's character. There's verses for that. It's used to reveal God's glory. The creation is used to discipline. He uses it at times to protect us, to nourish us, and so forth. And then, of course, it's part of the redemption plan, too, that it's part of salvation. And we need to extend our concept of salvation to include the earth if we didn't have that concept before. That Romans 8:18-23 passage is really major. That's the one that she explained this morning. If you want to know anything more about these, we can look them up or talk further. So, questions? Any questions? Romans 8:18-23 was it's not the only one, but that's really good.
Yeah, but
good.
I that's one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I have.
Groaning, and I thought that was that word was groaning, and then groaning.
That was really good. Mm-hmm. It was really good. And then I found this passage in Isaiah. This is what the Lord says. In the time of my favor, I will answer you. And in the day of my salvation, I will help you. I will keep you and will make you to be a covenant for the people to restore the land. And then it goes on. So that restoring the land is part of everything else that the Hebrews and the, you know, God's chosen people were involved in. And you'll find little phrases and sentences like that just slipped into everything. And if you really go to looking, you'll find it's just rich with references that you can use or that you can take to heart. The Christian viewpoint, it's important to know the Christian viewpoint. We have a creator God who's set things up for us. And then the first thing that happened was we broke away from him, right? And you know all the theology of bringing sin into the world and all these things, and that affected the world, the natural world, as well as human beings. And now we're trying to get back to that creator connection, and we do that through Jesus Christ, through the salvation of Jesus Christ. And and what we just said, that redemption also includes the creation, and we may not see that in all its fullness, I guess, until Jesus comes the second time and all that. But nevertheless, when you are saved here on earth and go through the salvation change, that redemption starts right now. You know, so the change starts here. We're not supposed to wait. There are some Christians who are waiting. They say we're promised a new heaven and a new earth. So who cares if, you know, we have smog devices on our old cars? Yeah, I had one guy tell me that. I was sitting in line waiting for something, and he started talking to me about it, and I'm going, give me a break. I couldn't believe he said that. His son has an old car, and we don't want to pay the money to get the smog devices on it. But we don't have to worry. Jesus is coming maybe next year. I thought, well, it's a very limited viewpoint.
You won't like
to
see that car.
Yeah. So when he gets here, is he going to have Earth? It's a total wreck, you know, and we're responsible.
At least right now in Washington, I think it depends on what county you live in or what city you live in, whether you have to have smoke devices or
I know California and some other states, Oregon and New York and Massachusetts, places like that are pretty advanced in their environmental legislation. So we have to do things. You need to know, without belaboring this, you need to know that there are other groups that understand that this is a spiritual problem. And the New Age people understand that. And so they're trying to bring a spiritual aspect of everything they do into this. And basically what they're doing, as far as I can make out, and maybe you have more knowledge of this than I do, but I'm from California where everything's going on. And I just finished a master's in Boulder, and it's like a little Berkeley, you know, it's like there's a lot going on there too. They're starting new religions. They're bringing up old heresies, like Gnosticism things. A lot of the teachings of Gnosticism are being brought back, and boy, they make them sound good, you know. But really, it's not a Christian viewpoint. It's totally different. The philosophy is based on something totally different, and they may not even be able to tell you what that is. But if you want to know, you can search it out. There are books coming out now that you can find, you know, what the truth is. In Boulder, I read a newsletter of the Church of Gaia, the G-A-I-A, you know, that's this whole earth business. And they just came right out and boldly said, we're starting a new religion. And it's based on sacred earth and blah, blah, blah. And you can come to their workshops. They have a children's program, etc. There was a Sacred Earth Society there, too. Sacred Earth Society of Colorado. And we need to work with these groups. They're on the environmental protection boards and all these things too, but we don't have to take up their philosophies. We don't have to be influenced unduly by their beliefs. But we need to know what we believe because of that. I think because of them, it's been a good thing for me. It has made me really define where I'm coming from as a Christian, which is good. The earth is not sacred, and I've got a paragraph or two about that in the book. You can find a verse in the Old Testament in Deuteronomy where it says, do not worship, you know, images of basically birds, animals, da 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 da, or nor take any of their creatures into your, I mean, you know, this as a spiritual kind of a thing. The minute you say the earth is sacred, then you're in the trap of having to worship a tree, or somebody's going to want to do that, you know, this kind of thing. But instead, we see the natural world as a manifestation or an expression of the Creator God. I shouldn't say manifestation, that is the wrong word. It's an expression of the Creator God. And it's just like a Rembrandt painting to me, because I'm an artist. When I go to the galleries and have the joy of seeing a Rembrandt painting in a big city gallery, I'm not looking at Rembrandt. Well, so we're not looking at God here. We're looking at an expression of God. It tells a lot about him, like the painting tells a lot about Rembrandt and how he saw the world. But it's not him. So that's how he sorted out.
Earth as a manifestation.
Yes. Respect it and love it, appreciate it. Exactly. But we don't worship it. So there's the difference. And it's for our use. And so that's part of it too. Another aspect of Christian viewpoint is that God has plans for the earth. He did it for purposes, and those purposes, his sovereign will is going to prevail. He will accomplish his purpose for the earth with us or without us, you know, and we're supposed to be doing his work, so, or God's work, so we better get with it. We're part of the plan. We're called to further God's purpose and called to use our individual and unique gifts, and we're called to do this individually and in community. And that's part of the Christian viewpoint. So that's the business end of it. I ran onto, if you want to know anything about biological information, in another book, what's it called? Earthkeepers, or Earthkeepers. That by Art and Jocelyn Myers, he's got four really good things for kind of trying to think along natural science lines. He said, you know, have to remember everything's connected to everything else. It That's, I say that at Holden a lot. Everything must go somewhere. You can't throw anything away. It's still going to be there. And nature knows best. The principles, and sometimes we see things where we don't think nature does know best because they get skewed or out of balance. But eventually, left alone, nature would pull it back into balance. And so knowing those basic principles and ecological things that they're studying now is really beneficial. So we can work with nature and not against it. And then the last thing he said is there's no such thing as a free lunch. We're all responsible. We're all in this. We're all part of the community. And that's a biggie, actually. Maybe not so much in the United States, but in third world countries where so many people, so much of the population has no say about, you know, the land, the resources, the way they live. They just really have very little input. And so that is a really, really big issue in other countries. Well, it's somewhat here, too. Somewhat here. So, Christian women, you have great influence in your home, in your church, in your community. You're a specialist in cultural things. I don't know if you've thought about that. Most women are. Anthropologists say that in ancient cultures, but not just ancient, it's still going on. We may have lost some, but we haven't lost it all. 60 to 80% of the knowledge of day-to-day operation of home life is done by the women, or the knowledge is known by the women. They may not be doing it all, but they know what needs to be done and organize it and, you know, provide this knowledge if you need it. And men know plenty too, but ours has been kind of a special role. And the theory is that this is one reason for menopause. Because women have carried this role in a culture, it's good for them not to have to be involved with childbirth and child rearing at older ages. They just need to be separated from that and have the time and the space to do this cultural business. So
that's very interesting. Maybe that's a common thing too.
Well, I never took an anthropology class too, but my husband teaches it and he finally came up with that, and I thought, why didn't you tell me that sooner? It's very interesting.
You know, really, when the Bible was written, women died before, during menopause. I mean,
it is hard.
The main role is to rear children, to have children and rear them, and they can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. But see,
have some way they feel useful or important.
Not all the women died before menopause. You know, we have this idea in our minds of the wise old woman of the tribe, you know, that had all the answers to when there was a problem. They would. Mm-hmm. It wasn't always the shaman or always the old man. Who understood the ways of the home place. You know, the men had their tasks too.
So that is biblical. That, you know,
this is biblical. Well, you can find it in the, you can find old women in the Bible.
I mean, I'm not disputing it at all.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's new learning to me that there were women that lived to be elderly.
It didn't occur to me to look it up in the Bible. I just been chewing on this for a couple of weeks. I got this on the way here from Colorado. But let's stop and think about that. Because it was a patriarchal society, mostly they gave the lineage of the man. They would give his age. He was so-and-so, how so many years, and then he died.
But they like Naomi, you know, Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, when there's, every once in a while somebody pops out.
Yeah.
Not often. Well,
and there was a judge or two, a
Esther,
woman, Deborah, was a judge, and she probably, you know, didn't.
I think we see it more in rural areas where you made it too far to go back to college because you got too
right.
Anyway.
Good for you, me too.
But, you know, that's not possible for everybody. And so in a little town like mine, I mean, first your mother, then your grandmother, and if you don't have that role, you're kind of on the outside looking in, because it's a very conservative farming community and very definite role distinctions between men and women. And
but what this is telling us is that those very roles, that's the part of the wisdom of that community. That's part of the wisdom of those women, as they understand how this life works.
I feel enlightened that, okay, this is why we live after menopause. Mm-hmm. I mean, the painful emptiness syndrome doesn't mm-hmm. have to be, because we can save the earth.
There you go. One thing you can do. It's a, you need to go with your gifts, you know,
we don't
figure
have
out.
We recycling place. And 2 years ago when I was here, I was sitting across the young man who was on staff, and he said, oh, I'll come start one in Odessa. And it's been great, but somehow we never connected. So. But that's something I'm sure you can do, to start recycling. I guess I could do that.
There's just a ton of things you could do. I came up with three kind of big areas. Now these are really broad. The first one is earth care, what you're talking about right now with the recycling centers, and certainly we need to do that, and it needs to happen. Pardon? A diaper service, right. Yeah. I mean, if you just think about all the disposable diapers that are in our landfills right this minute, it's just crazy. It's like, whatever happened to washing diapers? Oh, and we have a friend in our church who likes to sail, and he and his family, well, you know, two or three generations, took a sailing trip from Hawaii to San Francisco. It takes about 5 days. He said they were never out of sight of styrofoam floating in the water. Not 1 hour where they did they see it, an empty ocean. It was plastic floating in the water from whatever. The first time I ever saw the ocean was I was taken as a kid. We slipped sail to Newport with some friends, and we came up to the Newport jetty and looked over. I see in the water garbage. That was like 1945 or 6. What's all that garbage doing down there? That's why it's there. And they throw it off boats, you know, out of airplanes. Used to throw it out of airplanes. I mean, you know. Okay, so the earth care, we could go on and on about that. But I would like to point out the other parts too. The earth appreciation and the earth education. This was brought up in Tuesday. A woman from Honolulu, she said she teaches school. I was talking about making this creator connection and the fact that it's through the creation that many people have come to know the creator. I've come to realize there's something more out there than just us. And she said, we're losing that. She said, I teach urban kids. They have no concept of that. How can we put that back? We don't live on farms anymore. You know, they get to camp once a year. In our area, the sixth graders go to environmental camp 1 week. And it's a wonderful program. They have a wonderful camp. They have cabins and they stay all night for, you know, for 5 days or 6 days or whatever it is. And it's they keep them busy and they get them out in the woods and do all these things. But that's 1 week out of their whole life, maybe. So, I mean, can you think of other ways besides just the recycling, the housekeeping stuff, of course, we have to do. But maybe you could help us come up with some other things.
What does one do to start a recycling center? Do you contact others if you can?
Oh, I don't know.
Place.
How did you do it? Can you answer?
Well, you have to have a facility that's kind of warehouse-like. Okay. Mm-hmm. And basically that you can drive through. You have to have some kind of access to, whether it's railroad or trucking, that can come in and pick up this stuff and haul it out. And you have to know. You have to have somebody who's going to take it, whatever you collect, where is it going? So you have to have that all sorted out. So if you talk to other recycling centers, you can get information from them. At our recycling center, you drive in with drive into the building with your car, you get out, and they help you unload stuff, and then there's all these different boxes lining the walls, and you put stuff in the right big boxes about this. Crazy about this big, but they can just be picked up with the forklift and put on a truck.
How big is it?
Give or take 1,000, but outside of maybe about 2,000.
Because just in the neighborhood that I live in the city, Portland Recycling Team took over an old gas station They've got two big dumpsters, one's for newspapers, one's for scrap paper, and three dumpsters, excuse me, one for newspapers, one for scrap paper, one for cardboard and brown bags. Then they have barrels for glass and tin. And it's just, you know, it's not, doesn't even take up one quarter of a block. It's just an old service station. And if you have somebody who does the dumpster
thing. You wouldn't want a saving operation that's picked up into something more like that. Would work.
And maybe
you
don't.
A way to get it into Spokane.
Yeah, that's the main thing, to have the outlet.
And you may not be able to do everything right away. Maybe just start with newspapers and cans and glass.
By your garbage service.
See, in the state of California, Oregon's probably the same way, that the garbage people have to do that. It's state law.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, because you can only put so much stuff in the landfill, and so they had, this is how they're limited.
It just kills people to throw those glass jars off. I mean,
me too, yeah. It could be used.
But there's no place to put it.
Yeah. Anything else on Earth Appreciation? We're always, I get into the arts when I think about stuff like that, you know. But I think one big thing about helping people connect with the Earth is getting them familiar with it. So if they can get into parks or, you know, see the outdoors, get into the outdoors. But you can do this right around your house, couldn't you, with maybe gardens?
Planting trees,
parks, trees.
I'm education chairman at a church, and I'm always looking for a program, about 15 play programs every
year. Yeah, right.
But couldn't you do some visual art type thing about, you know, this is what happens if you don't?
Yeah, we did a good one 2 years ago, I think, Vacation Bible School. The thing was creation, and I remember, I forget what grade it was, they made these big, huge mural in front, you know, and they had the Earth, and it was like fourth or fifth grade that did these great cardboard box things of factories with pollution and stuff coming up, and they did some wonderful, then another group was doing some ecological things to show how to take care of some of that, but it was wonderful, and it's wonderful for the kids to build that and see how it fits together and then what can happen, you know, it was really good.
I'd like to see stronger Sunday school programs. Maybe you already have one, but I don't. You know. But Sunday school programs or church school programs. I mean,
because like when you do, you know, Sunday school, there's, depending on, we have kind of three different cycles sort of, but even when you do the creation one, there's not a big emphasis necessarily on the ecological part of it when you do the creation, you know, and with little kids, you don't get into it a lot anyway, but I think, you know, it could just be inserted, like, you know, stretch that part of that curriculum out a little and I think add some of that in, I think would be a big difference.
I think science education is going to become more and more and more important, but, you know, natural history. Mm-hmm.
Well, just learning how to compost is step.
Right.
It sure is.
Yeah. Sure, we cut our garbage can. It's this tall, and I you know, we have it picked up every week. But I miss that. If we work out, we can get it down to one pick of a month because we compost.
That's great.
Kitchen scraps and things like that. No dairy or meat in the city because that traps critters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have restrictions now. Did they come and look at it?
No.
Because in Gresham they
didn't have any.
Well, in Gresham they started this program a couple years ago, and if you could, to reduce the yard pickup and debris, they started a program where if you had a compost pile, if it fit the restrictions they had, the criteria they set up, then it would cut.